appraising Heidegger's interpretations of movement and time. This is a paper presented to the 27th North Texas Heidegger Symposium on the 17th of April 2009 by Michael Eldred from Cologne, Germany. Section 1. The Late Heidegger on Time. Heidegger's concern with time and being is well known from his early thinking right up to the late paper and seminar on time and being in 1962. The coupling of movement and time in his thinking, by contrast, is not as familiar, although the early Heidegger has left behind a profusion of lecture scripts in which also the movement of factical life is at the focus of attention. His conception of movement grows above all out of interpretations of Aristotle, his physics, his metaphysics, his ethics. Heidegger's 1962 paper, by contrast, does not concern itself with the phenomenon of movement, but with the giving of being and the giving of time by the eigenes, by appropriation. Time is accordingly the three-dimensional reaching, or reichen, of the three ecstasies of time, past, present, and future. This reaching, which Heidegger also characterizes as a giving, ein Geben, is in turn given by appropriation. Hence, time proper is a giving given by the giving of appropriation, that is, the giving of a giving, das Geben eines Gebens. Likewise, being itself is given by appropriation, as the giving of presence that in turn enables the presence of what is given, namely beings, in their epochal castings. Heidegger's effort is directed at thinking being and time non-metaphysically, which for him means thinking both being and time not in relation to beings, but in themselves, or rather, from appropriation. This accounts for the lack of movement in the time-space that Heidegger conceives as the clearing opened by the giving of time and being. Time itself is the givenness of presence in the unity of presence and absence, which is the three-dimensional reaching to one another of beingness as the denial or verweigerung of presence, future as the withholding or vorenthalt of presence, and the third dimension of presence itself. Heidegger therefore characterizes time as this overarching, unified reaching itself as four-dimensional. Can this four-dimensional reaching itself be regarded as a movement, just as perhaps the sending of being can? The giving of time and being by appropriation reaches human being. Otherwise, the human would not be a human being. Human being, or Dasein, is cast as stretching out into the three ecstasies of time. Hence, Heidegger can characterize the future itself as a coming toward us, ein auf uns zukommen. Is this future as coming toward us itself a movement, or is only that which comes toward us from the temporal dimension of the future in movement, as an arriving epochal casting of being? How does this coming toward us of the future relate to the temporal stretching of the life movement of human being itself? Isn't the withheld presence of the future itself only the dimension within which movement takes place, albeit a movement of another kind than the movements of beings pure and simple? Does human being itself move toward the future in receiving the epochal casting of being that comes toward us, withheld by the future? In any case, if there is movement in the time-space given by appropriation, it is a strange kind of movement, apart from the movements of the factical life of human beings, and also apart from the movements of physical beings as a whole. Let these questions stand for the moment and allow them to puzzle the will. Section 2. Time and movement in Aristotle's thinking. If in the modern age the phenomenon of movement has been reduced to a differential ratio, dm dt, where m is the magnitude lifted off any phenomenon at all, and T is the continuous variable measuring the uniform, that is, linear passage of the time variable, conceived as a continuum of instants. For ancient Greek philosophy, all the terms in this conception, that is, movement, magnitude, continuum, time, were still questionable phenomena with which it grappled. Returning to the scene of this questioning may allow us to come to a more adequate understanding of movement and time, of their paradoxicality that defies an all too self-confident, arrogantly narrow-minded logical rationality. Aristotle's physics represents the culmination and consummation of Greek attempts to think through the ontology of the physae onta, that is, of physical beings, whose being is characterized by their being kinoumena, or moving, movable. During his time in Marburg, Heidegger devoted much of his lectures to the interpretation of Aristotle's thinking in general, and his thinking on movement and time in particular. I will draw on the pertinent volumes of the Gesamtausgabe in recounting how Aristotle, as the acme of ancient Greek thinking, who drew the threads together, developed concepts of time and movement in his physics. The first book of the physics starts with a critical review of Aristotle's predecessor's thinking on the being of movement, kinesis, including that of Parmenides with his monoarchic determination, hen to on, being is one, which leads to a denial of the possibility of movement altogether. On pronouncing that, quote, it must not remain hidden what movement is, end quote, Aristotle proceeds in the third book to introduce the ontological concepts that will allow him to overcome the shortcomings of his predecessors, namely, above all, the famous triad, dunamis, energeia, and entelecheia, a triad as hackneyed as any other from ancient Greece in our snotty, unphilosophical times. Although we are entirely familiar with the phenomenon of movement, Aristotle claims that it remains hidden to us. This is the classic situation of philosophical thinking. It starts with what is most familiar, and thus in some sense known, in order then to show that we have always already skipped over the simplest of questions and appeased the understanding with only apparently adequate notions that take the phenomenon in question for granted. Now for a condensed rerun of Aristotle's stepwise unfolding of the required ontological concepts of movement. Ontological concepts grasp the phenomena in view as modes of being, which means, for Greek thinking, the ways in which the phenomena themselves come to presence and present themselves. Movement concerns all beings in the world, not just beings in some kind of nature. It is a misinterpretation to regard early Greek thinking as natural philosophy. For the Greek understanding of being, that which is present is, and what is present most of all, is the eidos, the look or sight that a being presents of itself. The eidos is hen, one, that is, a well-defined single look or gestalt that can also be addressed by the logos through the manifold of simple categories that defines horizein, or predicates, the being in how it stands in presence in its predicament. Movement is the phenomenon of change, metabole, and that with respect to four categories or predicaments. A being can change with respect to what it is, todeti, usia, associated with the phenomenon of becoming and decay, how it is, poion, associated with mutation, how much it is, poson, associated with waxing and waning, and finally, where it is, pu, kata topon, associated with the phenomenon of locomotion. The peculiarity of the phenomenon of movement, as Aristotle treats it in the physics, is that it cannot be pinned down to the present. Anything in movement has a twofold, or dichos, presence. First of all, it shows itself in the look of its eidos, but secondly, it also has a lack, stereses, that points to something absent which it could also be, that is, which could also be brought into presence. For instance, a full moon has the lack that it could also be a new moon, or vice versa. In what it is also in a certain way, that is, potentially or absently, what it is not, a meon. Meon is the pivotal concept for Plato's thinking on movement in the Sophist. Or a piece of timber presents itself in its eidos, both as timber and also as lacking what it could also be, namely, a table, for instance. What, how much, where, something could be through the appropriate movement is its dunamis, that is, its potential, potency or power to be something else, which is more than a merely formal or so-called logical possibility. The thing itself has an inherent tendency to become other than it is. It is not yet finished, and so in a certain sense it is what it is not. Aristotle conceives the lack in the twofold presence of a being in movement through the pair of concepts dunamis and entelecheia. A being with a potential, a dunameon, has the power to become something else, but as it is in its presence, it is still ateles, unfinished. It could only have itself in its finished presence in achieving entelecheia, that is, through its having itself in its end. Thus does Aristotle come to his first definition of the being of movement. It is the presence of the potential being as such, stretching itself toward its finished presence, and thus a peculiar twofold presence of both presence and absence, in which the potential being is on its way to becoming other than it is, attaining a finished state in which the movement will come into its end. In achieving its presence as a potential being, but not yet as finished, the dunamis is already fully present, that is, in its entelecheia, insofar as it is a dunameon, but it has not yet attained finished presence as something else in its realized potential. In movement, the potential being is still exercising its power of change. Hence, Aristotle writes, quote, "The finished presence of the potential being insofar as it is such is movement." End quote. In movement, the being's power to be what it can be is at work, that is, it is energeia, or energy. Therefore, Aristotle can say that movement is the energeia of a dunamis in its entelecheia. Movement itself is a phenomenon that cannot be defined by a single category. It has at least a twofold presence, and therefore must be addressed by a double concept, that is, by a pair of ontological concepts, dunamis and entelecheia, as a lack, as stereses, whose unified twofold presence is a third phenomenon, namely the at-workness of the potential underway or in transition to finished presence, which is movement itself. Because the tacit underlying Greek understanding of being is standing presence, to conceptualize movement it is forced to resort to a double or even ambivalent conceptualization. The gateway to the ontology of time for Aristotle and those coming after him is through the phenomenon of movement. Something present has the potential, the power, to be something else, which it can become through the appropriate movement, which itself comes to presence when the potential achieves its finished presence as a potential, namely in being at work as movement itself toward its end. What was, in the past, a potential power at rest is now, in the present, a power at work toward a future realization of the potential in a perfect presence. The three ontological elements of movement thus map onto the three dimensions or ecstasies of time itself, which 2.5 millennia later, and foreshadowed by Husserl's phenomenology of time, will be explicated as the temporality of Dasein in Sein und Zeit, whereas the Aristotelian conception of quantifiable time, now designated by Heidegger as the vulgar conception of time, as vulgaris Zeitverständnis, will be shown to be derivative of a more primordial conception of the phenomenon of time. When a power is at work, all three elements of movement are present, albeit that two of them, namely the power as potential and the power realized in a finished presence, are present as absence, that is, as no longer and not yet. This ontology of time is therefore thought on the basis of the paradigm of production, a particular kind of movement. A piece of timber, for instance, has the potential to be a table. This potential becomes present as such when the timber is being worked upon by the carpenter on its way to attaining a perfected presence in a finished table. The piece of timber, as in movement, is thus stretched in time between what it was potentially and what it will be finally, and only in this transition, as a simultaneity of presence and absence, is it in movement. Being itself is thought in Greek ontology as a production, a herstellung, namely, as a coming from an origin, a whence, an arche, a genos or tien, into the perfected presence of its site, its idea or eidos, most succinctly summed up in Aristotle's famous formula for the beingness or ousia of a being, to tienai, or the what it wasness of a being. Section 3, the aporetic nature of Aristotelian time and its consequences through Cartesian mathematical science and up to Zeinenzeit. Aristotle eschews the possibility residing in the triad of concepts he has fashioned to grasp the ontology of movement, and famously determines time instead quantitatively as the number, or arithmos, or measure, metron, of movement. Thus he writes, quote, "This namely is time, the number of movement with respect to earlier and later. Time is therefore not movement, but movement insofar as it has a number," end quote. And further, quote, "Time is the measure of movement, ho chronos metron kinesios. The now, or instant, to nun, divides the earlier from the later, like a point, stigme, divides a line, gramme, into two parts. An instant is literally that which stands in presence. The succession of nows counted off as now and now and now is the progress of time coming to presence and simultaneously disappearing from presence. This coming and disappearing itself being already a hint of time's twofold nature as both presence and absence." Aristotle raises the aporia that only the now is, so that time consists predominantly of that which is not, namely the no longer and the not yet. He lets this aporia stand, however. Time does not lie before us like a hypokeimenon to be spoken about. It is not a something, a t or ousia, lying before us to be addressed by the logos, for a something lying present at hand is only present, which would reduce time proper to the instantaneous now, noon, which, tellingly, has the ambiguous ontological characteristics of both discrete presence at hand, or standing presence, and fleeting continuity, or non-being. Time is, and simultaneously is not. Heidegger notes, quote, "From the hegemony of this concept of being as standing presence, it becomes clear why Aristotle interprets time itself starting from the present, the now," in German, "aus der Herrschaft dieses Seinsbegriffs als ständiger Anwesenheit wird deutlich, warum Aristoteles die Zeit selbst aus der Gegenwart, dem Jetzt, auslegt." Heidegger hence takes up the Aristotelian aporia, time's illogical nature as both present and absent, and this is central to his program to break the hegemony of the logos by finding a pre-logical access to being. As a quantity lifted off the phenomenon of movement, Aristotle can say, we measure, metoumen, time. It is a number, a measure, a magnitude, a megathos, and, like movement itself, it is continuous. Insofar as it is simply a number, time is unmoving, that is, outside time. So it is crucial that the counting of nows in the progress of a movement refers to the transitional character of the nows that they are underway from to, that is, always both present and absent. As a continuous magnitude, there is no smallest time, because any continuous magnitude can be divided further, but a number, an arithmos, there is a smallest one, which Aristotle takes to be the 2, because that is the first number one comes to in the act of counting, starting with the 1, the monas. Time is counted by saying now at least twice in succession, thus marking an earlier and a later. This raises the aporia in the nature of numbers as either countable and discrete, or as endlessly divisible and continuous, an aporia which was solved in mathematics as late as the 19th century with a concept of mathematical limit developed by Cauchy and Weierstrass, which allowed the infinitesimally small to be coherently calculated without assuming the infinitesimals as infinitely small magnitudes smaller than any real number. Infinitesimals can be dealt with as the limits of countable infinite sequences of rational numbers, thus bringing countability and continuity together. The mathematical concept of limit says roughly that by counting you can get as close as you like without actually getting there, thus once again a twofold of both presence and absence. But why should time be quantitative at all? In his detailed interpretation of Aristotle's ontology of time in Gesamtausgabe Band 24, Heidegger himself does not question the quantitative nature of Aristotelian time, but, on the contrary, takes some interpretative pains to justify it phenomenologically. For Aristotle, time is something lifted off, a phairesis movement itself, in its transitional character, and as such, it is an abstraction. Saying now, or a succession of nows, is an abstraction from any particular quality of the movement concerned, capturing only the phenomenal moment of transition from what was to what is to what will be. The only difference between successive nows is earlier and later, which makes of the counting of now moments or instants passing through the abstracting counting of time itself. Hegel saw that quantity is the abstraction from all quality, and the counting process of successive nows is indeed an abstraction from all quality of movement apart from its transitional, never to be pinned down character between, underway, or as both presence and absence. A kind of ordinal counting as a steady drumbeat of successive nows can therefore be phenomenally justified, and the successive nows can be added up to attain a succession of ordinal counting numbers going on indefinitely, which is the counting of time that can be made mechanical and arbitrarily refined in ever more sophisticated clocks beyond the rough counting of days, months, years, which are all regular movements of celestial bodies. The difference between any two counted now moments can be measured, and since they are read off movement, which is continuous, the measured magnitude of time itself is also regarded as continuous. We should note that the quantitative Cartesian or Newtonian ontology of time has its origin already with Aristotle's counted time. A four-dimensional Cartesian mathematical space-time is fully characterized by just four continuous variables in a quadruple, x, y, z, and t, of real numbers. Such a four-dimensional space-time is by no means put into question by relativity or quantum physics, both of which continue to operate with the mathematical language of four-dimensional vectors for space-time. The phenomena of fleeting movement and vanishing time are captured implicitly in the differential calculus of movement, and at the same time they are obscured, especially by the perplexing infinitesimals that for a long time defied mathematical logic. It is as if modern physics again stumbles upon the twofold nature of movement and time as both present and absent in subatomic physics when it comes up against the dual nature of subatomic entities and electromagnetic radiation as both discrete particles and continuous waves. The fleeting being of movement comes back to haunt the mathematical Cartesian way of thinking with Heisenberg's indeterminacy principle, which rests on the dual nature of subatomic entities. This is the famous Heisenbergian discovery that the position and momentum, or the position and velocity, of a subatomic entity such as an electron cannot both be mathematically calculated uniquely, but only within a certain range of probability. The ontology of time offered in Heidegger's Sein und Zeit breaks with the quantitative Aristotelian ontology, and therefore also with the later Cartesian mathematization of it, insofar as it shows that clock time is phenomenologically derivative of the more originary three-dimensional ecstatic time of Dasein. But Dasein's Zeitlichkeit nevertheless remains captive to an ontology of time still determined by the paradigmatic movement of production underlying Aristotle's interpretation of movement through his famous triad of concepts. The twist with Sein und Zeit and other writings from that period, however, is that no longer is it a piece of timber that is produced into a table through the realization of a potential, but it is Dasein itself that casts itself into the future in a kind of self-production. Therefore, Heidegger can write, quote, "Preparing its potential for being, Dasein comes to itself." In German, "Das Dasein kommt sein Sein können gewärtigend auf sich zu." This conception of Dasein's self and its self-casting imbues Dasein with a will to productive power residing in its own resoluteness. Insofar, we could say that Sein und Zeit still has not broken with the metaphysical tradition. The achievement of metaphysical thinking from its Greek inception on has been to grasp the phenomenon of movement in terms of both presence and absence, as eidos and stereses, in such a way that what is present, to dynameon, governs the productive movement of coming to presence of what is absent. This is the Western will to power over movement of all kinds. It must be qualified as a will to productive power over movement. It is an historically momentous obscuring of the phenomena of time and movement to conceive time simply as a mathematical variable. If, however, human being itself is, in truth, exposed to three-dimensionally stretched ecstatic time shared with others and also leading inevitably to death, then we have to return to reconsider movement and time, breaking both with the arithmetization and quantification of time, and also with the still productive conception of these phenomena remaining even in Heidegger's thinking. Section 4. Time in our capitalist economy. Significantly, although Aristotle casts an ontology of a rich variety of four kinds of movement, he does not consider anywhere as a kind of movement sui generis, the change that takes place through the exchange, the metabole or allage, of one thing for another, such as exchange in the marketplace, which would have brought in the category of prosti or relation, and another kind of movement, namely the social movement of interchange. The ambiguity in that crucial, indeed pivotal, Aristotelian term, metabole, occurring in Aristotle's principal definition of dunamis as a mode of being, which can mean both change and exchange, has had fateful consequences for Western history up to the present day. The metabole of greeting each other on the street, for instance, is an interchange whose ontological structure is already more complex than the productivist movement of a dunamis being realized one-sidedly through its energeia, in which a starting point governs a change in something else. Now, what can be said ontologically about economic movement and time? Like all movement, insofar as it is determined and therefore measured according to the Aristotelian and Cartesian castes of time, the value movement of capital is countered by time, which in this case is the turnover time of capital, the measure of a circular movement, a cycloforia, from M to M prime, which is equal to M plus delta M, that is, from an advanced principal sum to its return, augmented with a surplus. the shorter the turnover time for this circuit, that is, the faster value moves through its circuit as capital, the greater the surplus achieved in any standard period, such as a year. In decisive and essential contrast to the movement of physical bodies described by Newtonian or even Einsteinian laws of motion, however, there is no formula to compute the difference m prime minus m expressing the augmentation of money, because it is merely the outcome of a value power play in which exchange values are actually exchanged through being mutually estimated. There is no intrinsic potential exchange value inhering in a use value that could predetermine its quantitative exchangeable value, simply because exchange value itself only comes about or happens in a power play on the market among at least two and usually many players. Such is the power play played by all the players in a capitalist economy in their plurality, whose ontology represents a rupture with traditional metaphysics, because metaphysics can cope only with monoarchic movement, not with the polyarchic, playful movement of social interchange. Capital is therefore definitely calculating in that it reckons with a surplus value at the end of its circuit, but it cannot pre-calculate this surplus with calculative certainty, for the gainful interplay on the markets is essentially risky and uncertain. The circular movement of a single capital is both incalculable and uneven. The reproduction of an entire capitalist economy involves the intricate intermeshing of many individual circuits of capital. The turnover of the total social capital is therefore even more complicated and intricate than that of a single capital, so that the counted number or time associated with this total social movement is both incalculable and non-uniform, since the underlying movement of total social capital itself is both incalculable and uneven. This contrasts with Aristotle's determination of the measure of time as an, quote, even circular motion, a cyclophoria homales. The regular period of even circular motion makes counting easier and its number, namely time, easier to deal with calculatively. A public measure of time in a standard periodic movement also facilitates the coordination of movements, not only among capitals, but among the economic players in general. A uniform measure of time, such as the year, can be imposed on the movements of value as capital, but this is only the abstract subsumption of many complicated, uneven movements under a convenient conventional standard. If the turnover of the total social capital is the basic underlying movement of a capitalist economy, the measure of this turnover also provides the basic measure of time in such a society whose rhythm is determined by the circular augmentative movement of capital. This underlying social movement is uneven, which implies that time in such societies is also uneven, not like the more regular movement of, say, a simple agricultural society in tune with the movements of the seasons. Time in a global capitalist economy may even falter and stumble when the underlying movement of global capital falters and stumbles in an economic crisis in which the gainful game turns sour. If the turnover time of total social capital is an underlying basic measure of time in a capitalist society, the inherent tendency of capital as the determining gainful movement to shorten the turnover time means that time in such a society becomes shorter and shorter. That is, a capitalist society tends to continually accelerate time, even though such acceleration is not pre-calculable, but at most post-calculable, depending as it does already on the simple but nevertheless incalculable transformation of commodity value into money value, and of money value into commodity value. Fifth and final section, recovery of the three-dimensional, complexly interwoven social time of who interplay. An interchange among economic players, which is a power interplay for gain, can be, and often is, mutually beneficial. To bring the fair face in both economic power play and the more general social interplay of mutual estimation to the forefront requires, as an ontological condition of possibility, recovering the three-dimensional time that has been quantified as a mere mathematical and hence timeless variable t. For the time in which we play the gainful game is our own finite lifetime of our own life movements leading to death. Firstly, as elaborated in Heidegger's Sein und Zeit, the mathematical variable t has to become thought and experienced as the three-dimensional, ecstatic, finite time of human being itself that casts itself into the open dimension of the future by retrieving who it has been and fashioning its own most singular possibility of existing. Such self-casting, however, is close to being misunderstood as auto-production, and thus as a perpetuation of the Western will to productive power. Therefore, in a further twist, this three-dimensionally stretched time, which accords with the life movement of human being itself in its plurality, stretching toward its future, has to become thought and experienced as the intermeshing social time of social movement itself, which is not just the measurable movement of total social capital, but the immeasurable, complexly interwoven movements of social interplay in which each individual haphazardly comes to stand or fall for a time as some who, to gain or lose itself in the power play of social estimation and social validation of its powers and abilities. The plural nature of such a power play is already beyond the reach of the calculating epistemic power thought at the inception of metaphysics and emulated to the present day by both the natural and social sciences. The power interplay is played out as complex movements in lifetime in which the players are not the underlying subjects, have no substance, and, despite their self-deceptions, inherently cannot achieve a standing presence. What does this imply for those questions posed at the outset regarding Heidegger's late thinking on time? First, it implies that the movement of giving, represented by the sendings of being as epochal castings of the world, remains abstracted from what is cast in such a casting. Second, the movement of the reaching of time in which an epochal casting of being arrives from the future is the slow time of philosophical thinking itself. And thirdly, this double movement of the sending of being and the reaching of time still has nothing to say about the interwoven movements of human power plays in which the values of things and persons come about fluidly through mutual evaluating, estimating, appraising, validating, and esteeming.